Chema. So there are two possible ways of looking at creation. One is to look at it from above downwards, top down view, a view which is accessible to the gods and of course the divine. And from there, when we look at creation or those mystics who have risen to these great heights, creation appears as a play field. That's why they use the word Leela. It's a play of the Lord. So when they say it's a play field, it doesn't mean that there are no difficulties and challenges. We all know that any play, any sport has its challenges. Even there are games in which two teams are playing, in which in an extreme intensity of the moment, there may be even foul play. But what happens in a play is that there is no enmity. And both teams, whether they win or lose, they grow. Any which way they grow. It's a sports after all. So seen from above, that's how creation looks to those who have crossed beyond the sphere of the sorrow. But seen from below, creation appears as a struggle, a battle and a fight. It is not a play field, but a battlefield. Which is what we are sharing through Essays on the Gita. And that's why Essays on the Gita is such a practical book, or the Gita, because it takes this standpoint. While it is true that there is that higher standpoint, and we see this in Krishna Leela, that there are two aspects of Sri Krishna. One where he is dancing with Gop and Gopis in Vrindavan. Everybody is in delight. The only sorrow for these people, if at all, is when Krishna is away from them. Now we can't imagine how can this be a cause of sorrow. An average human being will say, what is there to feel sorry about God not being there physically in your life? But to the Gop and Gopis, that's the only sorrow. And their only joy is some contact with Krishna. But on the other hand, Krishna has another side to him, another dimension, and that is he is the master, or the he has risen to destroy. Whom has he risen to destroy? His own people in the great battlefield of Kurukshetra. Now there, everything is sorrowful. Whether you are apparently on Krishna's side, whether you are apparently on the other side, it's a struggle, a challenge, and a sorrow. So these are the two perspectives through which one can see creation. The higher you rise, the more the play begins to appear more and more clear. And sorrow passes away from the heart. It does not mean that things won't happen that ordinarily will cause sorrow. But you are not afflicted by sorrow. Like the Gop and Gopis, their only sorrow is when the divine contact is lost. Otherwise, they are in delight. Everything is happening. All the Rakshasas and Asuras are coming there, but they get nullified. That's something very interesting about the story, that he's growing up, all the deadliest of people come, but Sri Krishna, they just go away. They vanish. And sometimes one even wonders why he doesn't do it on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. There should have been no battle. So that is the difference between those one type of humanity which is so beautifully open and responds to the divine like plastic clay. There's a beautiful poem of Sri Aurobindo, The Dance of Krishna and Kali, the cosmic dance. And another type of humanity which is not open to the play of the divine, not open to the divine. And these two are as if contrasts given in one single book. What life could become if we open to the divine beautifully with complete faith, surrender. Again, it does not mean things won't come, but they will either just pass away, maybe slightly touching us, what could have led to a, terrible accident, leave just a little scratch. Or even if something happens, your inner being is completely sheltered. And we all have seen such people. I have seen, I'm sure everybody has seen, people going sheltered as if through that entire zone. But on the other hand, there is another kind of humanity which resists the divine working, which resists, which is not ready to obey the divine impulsion. And there again we come back to this battle of Kurukshetra, because it's a very illustrative example where Sri Krishna offers a very simple way to reconcile the problem. And it's a very fair and just way. But it is refused. And when it is refused, we see there is the tremendous massacre, one of the worst kind of massacres we can imagine, with some 18 million being destroyed and only 18 remaining out of that. So that's the kind of scale of destruction that took place. How is it connected to our story, the story of Mother and Aurobindo? It's very interesting that just as Sri Krishna wanted life to blossom without any challenges, difficulty, in freedom and delight, that's how Mother puts it, Sri Krishna came to earth so that he can teach us how to live normally and freely and delightfully. So when we look at the events before the 24th April, because we have chosen this topic for this beautiful day, 24th April. So the mother was trying in a very similar way that everything, humanity could open just like that. And for that purpose, she had actually chosen to descend into hell. She was taking upon herself all the problems and burdens, so much so that she had tied a full-blown asuric being right next to her, that if this fellow changes, rest will change. But she discovers that this is not going to be this way. And that divine pathos is reflected in her last prayer, just before her departure. So that prayer is there, the last prayer in Japan. And that last prayer, she speaks about it later on in her conversations. In 61, she speaks about this prayer. But the prayer is in September 3rd, 1919. So she writes in that prayer, since the man refused the meal I had prepared for him, I have offered it to you, O Lord, and thou hast come. She describes, it's a vision of the Supreme. Twice she had the vision of Supreme, and one of them is at that point of time, the Supreme comes and accepts the meal. And obviously the meal is nothing else but, you know, I think there is a doctrine of transubstitution. See, this is a very interesting concept. Those who understand about the secret doctrines of the church, of the Christian mystics, they would know when Christ says, this is my blood, when they are taking wine and he breaks the loaf of bread, and this my flesh. So in India it is known as prasad, where the divine pours something of his very physical consciousness, matter into the through matter into material substance, and then he gives it to the disciples and those who are around. The mother was doing this, and it is because matter is the main field where things have to change. So she was doing this. She has not described how she was doing it, but at one place she knows that she was trying to convert these asuras and turn humanity beautifully toward the divine. She is capable of doing it. Being the divine mother, the supermind beyond everything is with her. She doesn't need the supermind to be established here and then do that work. And Sri Aurobindo has said this abundantly in one of his letters, that if mankind were integrally sincere, then she could effectuate the transformation right then and there. It's said in so many words. She had brought down the overmind creation. She could have brought down the supermind creation as well. But then when she discovered that no, it doesn't work like that, because there is a deep resistance in the human heart which is born from the inconscient depths, and we'll come to it in a moment. So because of this resistance, man refuses the meal. Meal is in Sanskrit we have the same word annam for matter and for the food we take, annam brahmeti. So he sees that man has refused. See, man refuses, what do you do? If you put more pressure, it will just break down. So then the Supreme comes and he shows her it won't be like this, and points the way, carries her in fact to India, where on the other side there is Sri Aurobindo, and she comes here and the whole story begins anew. So that's why she spoke of this day as marking the day when there is a tangible sign of sure victory over the adverse forces. These adverse forces were completely denying this divine possibility. So how they were denying? During that period, we know that they tried to create all kinds of problems in mother's own physical body. There was the First World War. There was the Spanish flu. And yet, in spite of all that, they came together. So this was the tangible sign that in spite of all this, they have come together. And this is going to be now the sign that they are all going to one day leave this earth atmosphere. So there comes our story. Where do we figure in? Sometimes our life seems like it is a dance of Krishna and Radha. Those are moments when we too feel our hearts wide open to the divine. It's one of those when people come in the beginning, they are filled with that psychic touch. Mother speaks about it. There was an advice to newcomers, and she says when people come in the beginning, they come with the psychic open, and we all know this. So then what happens? Everybody, either Auroville or Ashram, everybody is a yogi, a sadhu. Anyone you see working, I still remember first time landing in Auroville and there was somebody bare bodied taking a run and stopped and asked something. He asked Matri Mandir and we couldn't see any Mandir and said yes. So breakfast, no, we didn't have. So he took us to the breakfast. He was French and I didn't know French. So, but it was such a joy. I said, oh, this is how the divine angels work. Suddenly in the middle of nowhere, we were dropped and this person comes like an angel. We go to center guest house and the kitchen, I don't remember where. And it's such a delight. Same thing with ashram. Everywhere, everybody is nothing but a saint. Now, people are saints or not is a different matter, but there is this psychic little something which has opened and it begins to perceive something of the divine presence in everyone and everything. So, everybody is a saint. So, this is the beginning. But she says, what happens very soon? Now, there are parts of nature that need to be worked upon, and so this door closes. And then the same life which was such a beautiful, joyous Vrindavan changes into Kurukshetra. Especially if you begin to live. People when they come for some time, they feel very nice, oh, so beautiful everything. Because you are deprived, famished of food, spiritual nourishment. And when you come for a few days, that's what you deal with. But when you begin to live, you live in an ideal world where all is beautiful. And all is beautiful in that state. We have a foretaste of what life could become. I put it like that because people get disappointed. I say, no, it is a foretaste of what life would become if it was completely under the psychic influence. And the mother says that after some time, old age comes, people begin to find faults. Fault finding becomes a favorite pastime. Gossiping becomes nourishment, etc., etc. And then she says, what is the remedy? To go back to that psychic touch. Go back there. There is always that Vrindavan where we can take shelter. Of course, provided we have opened. I am saying that most of the time it happens like this. So why is it like this? So that's where the role of the adverse forces comes into this yoga. So yoga is not a straight line, and people often think about yoga as learning some practices and doing those practices and you'll have some wonderful realizations. You'll have experiences, you'll even have realizations. But Sri Aurobindo says that's not enough. Until the outer nature changes, until the whole being is transformed. In traditional yogas you don't care. You have those experiences and realizations, so it's fine. You withdraw more and more into that part. You don't care about your nature. You may be prone to anger. It's known. Many of the rishis, they are quick to anger. ready to curse. But they are rishis nevertheless. They have discovered something beautiful inside, and a mystic can withdraw into these depths and live without much concern about the world around. He can even declare from those heights, it's a play. And you go and ask him, but this play is quite a terrible play. It doesn't quite seem a play. It seems sometimes like a cruel joke. Mother speaks about it. He said, no, you cannot understand the mystery of God. It's a play. Now, it is true that there is a certain state in which it appears like that. It is like that. Mother speaks to Huta and says that, my child, you have a little door which is closed and the key is given to you. It is the psychic key, but you are not opening it. You open it and enter into it. Then whenever there is a storm, you can open and enter into it. And it is true. One of the first steps of yoga, that's why Shobindo emphasizes, the first thing is the psychic change. And once we do it, life becomes so wonderful. Yoga becomes so wonderful. But otherwise, the storm is still there. The blinding storm, the rise of all kinds of things from nature. So the question is, why nature is the way it is and what we can do? What is our role, if any? How does this manifest in our real, in real time? Because yoga is in real time. No amount of practices, meditation practices, this kind of meditation, that kind of meditation, meditation with $100 fees, meditation free of cost, meditation through a book, through music, all this is fine. But yoga is in real time. And that's where the challenge of the adverse forces comes in. So what are these forces? What is their role? If you look at creation, it is emerging from the darkness of the unconscious, where it has plunged. And this emergence is with great difficulty. And Shobindo describes it, it's like a mother who is holding the child to her apron strings, not letting it go out into the world. So the inconscient doesn't like it. Why? One simple example will suffice. Somebody who is in deep sleep, slumbering, snoring, wake him up because there is a danger nearby. But when you wake up, what is the first response of an average person who is in deep sleep? Anger, intense anger. Why have you woken me up? I'm not talking of the audience here and people who are into yoga. But generally, they are very angry. As doctors, we get trained into getting over this because you cannot afford to. But otherwise, there is that intense, that anger will depend on the depth of the inconscient you have plunged during sleep. And then you come, you rub your eyes, you are totally confused, disoriented. Oh, there is a danger here. Okay, your mind is confused. You don't know what to do about it. Then after some time, some kind of clarity will begin to emerge. So when creation begins to emerge, when the divine wakes it up, that's described in Savitri in the very first canto, teased inconscient to wake ignorance. It's like literally asking it to wake up. And this touch of the divine is strangely felt as if it's a disturbance. And so the inconscient doesn't want it. Also because it will have to undergo a change. This is one of my answers to many of my friends who are non-believers and all this. So I say, yes, it's the easier thing to do. It is easiest not to believe. Why? Because then you don't have to change yourself. I give this logic. I said, apart from the fact that you are relying only on the senses, it doesn't require any brain work, it doesn't require any deeper thought, it doesn't require any higher experience. You are seeing things as they appear to your mortal vision, and that also not sufficiently, but okay, on the surface, and you conclude. That's why books like, Utopia Gone Wrong and all is such sheer nonsense. You are looking at things from the surface. And such surface seeing into the ways of the divine only reflects our own stupidity. But nevertheless, there are people who see, they become atheists. What is this world, all this? Snatch and grab and survival of the fittest. I tell them, you have an easier task. Why? Because you are going by appearances. But most importantly, why does Freudian psychology appeal? Because there is nothing more appealing than to somebody to tell me I am an animal. So I can have a free reign over all my impulses. The moment I am told that you are not just an animal, you are a chained god. A god is stifled under you, which needs to fly. Now you see there is a problem. Many people would undertake the journey of yoga, go through this, and I'm sure people will connect. When you are outside in life, you don't experience conflicts within so much you experience outside. You have a problem with your neighbor, you have a problem with your wife, husband, family, all kinds of people. Which is manageable. You can avoid workplace, you can change the work. But here you are facing the conflict inside. Suddenly you discover that, oh my God, there is a possibility inside me, but I am behaving like an animal. I am behaving so stupidly. It's not something which I am in my deepest essence. Now that's where the difficulty and the struggle of yoga begins. So added to the already existing problems, which anyways we have to face, problems of everyday life, we have to face the internal challenges from the enemy within. And the paradox is when we face it and conquer it, then strangely, we have a very different perception of the things which are happening outside us. Say for example, you have a quarrel with your neighbor. Very easy to say, oh, he is a fool. Very easy. And then five people will get together and gossip that that neighbor is a fool. This man doesn't know that three of them will meet this neighbor tomorrow and gossip about you, that he is a fool. But life goes on like that. It's the easier thing to do. But when you undertake that maybe something of that neighbor which irritates me is because it reminds me of something within myself. It evokes a certain kind of response within me, maybe of anger, maybe of irritation. And I don't like it. And if I overcome it, then perhaps my neighbor will not appear so stupid and foolish as I have believed him to be. So this is how the process of yoga goes from within outwards. So where do these adverse forces come in? They are the ones, basically, what is their purpose? Seen one way, they want to create a big distance between us and the divine. Just imagine, on one side we are told, divine is not only the essence, he is all this that is. Just imagine, Isha Upanishad says that, Atma Vabhut Vijanata, he has become all these things. It doesn't mean it's all static, it's changing. So he has become this divine in the past, moving toward divine in the future. And when we look at this, very easy to understand. If you look at the conceptions of the divine, you see that in the past human beings had conceptions of the divine which are more closer to animal kind, more closer to, even they had they worshipped images and beings who were, if you look at it one way, they look very titanic, almost asuric beings. But as mankind evolves, the conceptions of the divine also begin to change. The divine who is outside as somebody who will give you a carrot or a stick, beat you black and blue, condemn you, suddenly begins to become more and more benevolent, loving, kind, generous, ready to forgive, and then he is seated in the heart. This is what we see in the legend of Shiva. He is Rudra to the Asuras and he is Ashutosh to the gods. But if the gods commit a mistake, again he assumes the Rudra aspect. So this is how we see that mankind evolves, the divine in the past and the divine in the present and the divine in the future becoming. So what do these adverse forces do? They first try to create a gulf between us and the divine. What does it mean? They will act upon the mind, upon the heart, upon life and the body. Which way? They will act upon the mind and a suggestion will come floating like a doubt. Oh, mother is not here. I have never honestly heard a more silly argument. But anyways, mother is not there. It is no more the same thing. When I came, somebody, when mother was there, mother was here. I said, please don't speak. You have been here for 50 years. Don't speak such inanities. I didn't use the word inanities. I said, what do you mean? I said, I have never felt for a moment that she is not here. I have never seen her with these physical eyes, thank God. I never felt. Now I am hearing that she is not here. Should I challenge my own experience or your logical argument, then I would tell them that, look here, she is not the body. She kept telling you, and we are not the body. This is a basic spiritual teaching of all teachings. Anyways, so they will create a doubt. Or even if she is here, I don't know. Look at life. Nothing has changed. Is she really divine? People would even say, if she is divine, why is she falling ill like ordinary human beings? They would ask Sri Aurobindo. Sri Aurobindo would say, she is taking upon herself. At one place he had to tell them, don't you know about this? That even Sri Ramakrishna, when he was asked, why are you having cancer? And he said, the burden of the disciples, their karma, the divine has to wash it. And where does he wash? Entering into the gutter. So naturally all the fume of the gutter and all that enters. He has to do it right there. He says, don't you know it? So they will throw in the mind all kinds of doubts about the divine. And there is no logical way. There are logical ways to counter it. But doubt for doubt's sake will bring in fresh doubts. Always. That's why it is said, doubt is a dangerous enemy. Don't entertain it too much. So should we not question? Yes, we must question. Questioning is different. Questioning is a seeking spirit. For example, mother, how is it that you had fallen ill? She will reveal to us. Doubt is, she has fallen ill, therefore she is not divine. Doubt presumes things. And a questioning spirit want to understand. Mother, you ask us to obey. Why should we obey? She will reveal to us. But if I say, no, each of us are free, individuals, then she will tell us, we learn the hard way that none of us is free. We are slaves to our desires, passions, every kind of thing. We are not free. We believe we are free. This is one of the things which have been thrown into us. If we are already free, then we don't need yoga actually. Because yoga is, first step is mukti. Mukti is freedom, freedom from ignorance. And if I believe that I am free, then there is nothing to be done. No effort is required. So yoga is required to get free from all kinds of notions, preconceived ideas, 101 things, traditions, past. All that is all around us like a chain and we don't even realize it's a big burden that we carry on our heads. How will it attack the heart, these forces? Oh, I don't know. Mother is very far. Worse still, she must be angry with me. Mother doesn't love me. She loves only those people who are working in mother's room, who are working near the samadhi, who are working in Matri Mandir, so lucky fellows. But we commoners far away whom she doesn't love. All these things sadhaks have been afflicted with at different times. And then we put ourselves in a very unnatural struggle. We want to be there where apparently the mother is closest. And then we realize it doesn't work that way. You may sit the whole day and yet be far. And you may be far away and yet be near. We have this story in Ramayana. Bharat, far away and yet so near. Equally, Lakshman is near. But you see, Rama is always feels a little closer to Bharat, always. And Lakshman doesn't understand. Sometimes he feels right from childhood. There is a bit of sibling rivalry. I am walking with him, I have surrendered myself. But he is, the moment you take the name of Bharat, Rama goes, he is waiting. He is all melts. He goes into a different world altogether. Whenever you see in Ramayana, whenever Bharat is mentioned before Ram, he is like, even Sita, he wants to bring her back early. Why? Not so much because of Sita. I must get her in time. Bharat will not live one day more if I am delayed. This is his problem. Why Bharat? Bharat is physically not close to him. But Bharat lives as if everything belongs to Rama. This is the psychic state. Lakshman is close to him, but he throws up doubts in between. How come? How dare? No, you should not. You are being too kind, too gentle. You must pick up your Brahmastra and shoot at him. And Rama has to cool him down. So this is where we have to understand in the heart they fill it with the sense of divine is very far from me. Once this state enters, then all kinds of other things can enter. This is the opening. Doubts in the mind, the feeling that mother is not close to me, she does not like me, she disapproves me, she is angry with me. And when we read the letters, it used to lead people to states of despair and departures from the ashram. Mother is pleading, literally Sri Aurobindo is pleading to Dilip Kumar Roy. There is a letter. He says, I want to go away. He says, we cannot give sanction. Imagine, we cannot give sanction to your going away because we know it is the ploy of the adverse forces that want you to go away from us. Of course, he says in the end that ultimately, of course, we leave you free. But if you ask us, we will not give you the sanction. That he went away is a different story. That he felt lamented. All who went away like that, from Barin Kumar, Sri Aurobindo's brother, to everybody who left like that and went away, they did lament later on. But they come, they want somehow to dislodge and go away far from the divine. 101 excuses for going away from the divine, but one reason to be close to him. And that one reason is, what else is worth living for? We don't need any other reason. What he will give, what he'll, if we go with this idea, oh, I'll be transformed, this will happen, I'll have magical power, then one cannot stay for long. But if one reason, that just to be near him, that's all that one wants, then one would never want to go away. Because just to be near, in whatever way, if you can't see physically, then a place which has been touched by her, her work, her project, whatever you call, like Auroville. Auroville is her dream. What a tremendous, I would say, opportunity to participate in the dream. What happens is really, at the end of the day, is not so important. But to participate in the dream, venture. Otherwise, to join an MNC and participate in looking after family and all this is such an absurdity. Anyways, that's a different story altogether. Then they attack the life force when they cannot, when we are able to get over them, they attack the life energy. And how they attack? In two ways. One, they fill us with the idea of that sense of grandness. Oh, I am a guru, I am a big instrument, I don't need now. You know, there was this boy called Prashant. He was Dara's brother. It seems he was Aurangzeb in his previous... he was Aurangzeb in his previous life. And Dara was Dara Shikoh. That same, brothers. Now also brothers. And when there was this partition of India and Pakistan, he suddenly said, I don't think I have done whatever was needed in this yoga. See how the old nature can trap you. Now I don't need to be here. One of the brothers, he just went away, goes away. Prashant goes all the way back to Hyderabad, walking along the railway track, dies a very ignoble death. So these are real things of spiritual life, and they can attack in any which way, fall back to the past way of life, because one is so accustomed to it. So all these ways are aggrandizing. I have arrived. Now I have only to teach others. Now I am myself, I don't need anything. This idea that I don't need support of the divine ones, there was a seminar where there was a person whose name was Swatantra Dev. I don't know who kept his name. And he was wearing a Gerwa Vastra, and you know, we were all in a meeting. And he said, all that is okay, I'm tired of listening to, you know, all this. Sri Aurobindo did this, mother did. Okay, they did what they had to do. Now we have to do what we have to do. I said, I found it very amusing. So I asked him, who are you? So he said, I am Swatantra Dev. I said, that's your name. Who are you? Do you know whom are you speaking about? I mean, what they had to do is so casually. Do you have even an idea what they have done, what they are doing? First you understand that. Then you talk about, now we have to do what we have to do. There's a lot of people who take it that now I'm carrying the mother's work further by plunging into the cells. They can't even plunge inside in their own consciousness, and plunging in the cells and transforming it, some golden light is coming out. Should be so careful. Ego aggrandizement. Becoming a guru of integral yoga or any yoga, this yoga, that yoga, all these are all plays of the adverse forces. And it's much later that one realizes that one has strayed from the path very far. Everything should be in the spirit of service and consecration. Sanctioned by her. Sanctioned by her, everything is beautiful. Even running a kingdom is wonderful if sanctioned by her. But there, a lot of sincerity is required. And other way that they attack the life force is by depression, despair, unfitness, guilt. One of the worst ways these adverse forces act. You're no good. See, you did it again. You're a bad person, you know. Mother describes them that they are called as censors. So they sit on the shoulders. You must have seen in some of these movies, those two devils on the shoulder, constantly saying, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. So after some time, and you people begin to believe the divine's voice is pointing to me what is wrong. Divine does not point out what is wrong. Divine points out what is right. Divine points out what is good. Divine points out what is beautiful. And that's how he helps us to grow. He knows what is wrong in us. And that we have to discover, that we have to get rid of. So that's, but they will make us feel eventually unfit for the yoga, unfit for spiritual life, and despair, depression, guilt. And again, you see, why depression? Because we feel divine is far. Then you feel he is so far. I can't sit for meditation. I can't go within. All kinds of things. Let me not narrate. So these are difficulties that come to sadhak, and they are prone to it. And when all this also you are able to clear, then their favorite place is the body. Body is their fortress. Because matter has emerged from the inconscient. All over in the body they have made, literally as they say, gates through which they can enter. If you look at the way human body is, and there is a very nice prayer in one of the Upanishad that, you know, evil came, pierced my ears. Evil came, pierced my eyes. What does it mean? When the eyes is pierced by evil, it's a gate, one gate. So you see only evil. You start seeing hostile forces everywhere. You are supposed to see divine in everything. But you begin to see darkness everywhere, in everything, everyone. Everything is bad, everything is horrible, everything is wrong. That means evil has pierced the ears. I put a paint over it. Her eyes. Ears. Everything. You get the wrong inspiration. You get wrong thoughts. Wrong suggestions. Ears. So you have these two. Mouth. Speech. And all others. All the other, as they say, doors opening toward these forces. But there are 2-3 doors which open to the divine, but they are not easy to access. One is, of course, the well-known door in the forehead, whereby concentrating we can move up the ladder of consciousness. One is in the depths of the heart. These two especially are the royal doors of entry into the divine. And when these forces attack us, they want to create a separation between matter and spirit, all kinds of gulfs. We see in Savitri all the positions that death takes are positions of the adverse forces. And when they try to attack us, we have to do 2 things or 3 things. One is reject those movements. Don't entertain them. And when we meet people who throw these movements inside, stay away from them. They may look like friends, but they are enemies. If you meet people who are constantly throwing, who discuss all kinds of negative things all over, look at this world, look at this, where is the transformation? Stay away. They may not be able to see. It's okay. It's their problem. But you can see it. That's why the mother says, with regard to adverse forces, if you really want them to disappear, hasten your own transformation. Don't get into these debates and discussions. This one movement of rejecting doubt aggressively and actively. Second is substituting. If doubts come, instill faith. How to instill faith? 3 ways. One is to just tell yourself. As Shivindra says, the faith required in this yoga is a 3-fold thing. One, that the divine exists. Obviously, there is no yoga if we don't have this faith. That if the divine exists and he has called me to the path, then I am destined to reach. What a powerful assurance. Called to the path means I have stumblingly, grudgingly, complainingly, I have landed up here. Something like a call has arisen in me. That means my destiny is secured. Shorter or longer is a different matter. And the third is, I am a child of the Divine Mother, I cannot fail. If we cannot say this to ourselves, ask faith from the Mother. If this also we find it difficult to ask, read books which will instill faith. That's the time. That's why it's so important not to come into all kinds of influences. The Mother would often say, multiple gurus, we under the garb of guru, somebody comes and throws a doubt. I've seen people, then this sticks inside. Oh, that person, he's practicing the integral yoga and how he has, then, you know, because he's a great influence, even in so-called, I don't want to quote, but there are books like that. In the name of Sri Aurobindo and the Mother, and suddenly in the last few pages, some of us will be able to connect, a book inspired by Sri Aurobindo, and suddenly when you enter the last few pages, you feel, where have you entered? It suddenly throws a doubt. Everything seems to appear dark. We should be very careful because we have to be attached only to the Mother, not even to her most luminous angels. That's why it is an advice Sri Aurobindo has given. So this is how these things can enter, through influence of people, books. So we should rather instead read books which will inspire faith. Book like Savitri removes all doubts, all depression in one moment. Prayers and meditation, two perfect remedies. And reading and writing, even better remedy. And third method is simply calling the Mother's name. So one is rejecting these things, doubt, depression. How do we reject depression? Very simply, it's a wave that is coming. Stand back. Don't start enjoying it. Yes, yes, it is true. Life is so dark. Everything is so bad. I am so horrible. Everybody, see, I have known people who suddenly say, hey, nobody is doing yoga. What are they doing? I know. Where is yoga going on? Yoga is going on in the inner depths. You can't see it if you look at the pant, shirt and makeup of people. You can't see. That's not where yoga is going on. That's where one day yoga will also go on in that field. But it's going on inside. The wrestle inside the human heart. We don't see it. So people who see only outwardly, outer change, they start presuming. So we should try to observe. That's why the Mother says vigilance is so important. Why vigilance is important? Because we'll notice it coming. It's striking, a touch of depression, a taste of depression, a wave of despair. That is the time we should fling ourselves in the arms of the Divine. Run to anything which makes us remind of the Divine. Go to Matri Mandir, go to the Samadhi, go anywhere, sit there. Pick up a book, read it. Because that moments, if you sit and try to meditate, very often it doesn't work out. Engage yourself in some service. Stay busy all through. That's why one of the best remedies for all these things is to stay busy throughout the day. In work of the Divine. Even otherwise, work is very good. It takes us out from a small little hole of ego. So she advises vigilance. You have to catch it before it enters. And if it has entered, don't let it go deep inside. Separate apart. If it goes, even tries to go deeper, call Mother's name. Sri Aurobindo has said, Mother's name, all these. Mother herself has said, Sri Aurobindo has advised this, call Mother's name. And Mother has said, these forces run away very far. And many of us must have had this experience. I had one once, number of times, but one of them were just calling Ma, Ma, and they run away. And what is the effect? First, your inner being is cleared of all sense of fear or feeling that there is a danger. You get that certitude that nothing will happen. And then from the outside, and to keep calling Ma, Ma, Mother, Mother, whatever way we want to call it, name of the Mother, it has great power in it. They know it. Calling it's like when you're caught on the eye. I know a friend of mine who, when traffic police will catch him, he will suddenly take the name of some big fellow. He doesn't know him much, but he'll say, do you know him? So the traffic police will say, who, sir? Oh, you don't know him. Okay, I'll call him. No, no, sir. It's okay, you go. he is frightened. You don't know which big man is he going to ring up and make him speak. But these forces, when you are taking the name of the divine, the name of the divine is so powerful. Ramayana speaks of it so beautifully. When Hanuman is doubting whether he can do it or not do it, nobody knows, nobody has ever gone there to Lanka, and Hanuman is given this impossible mission impossible, our original mission impossible, okay? Not mission impossible series. First mission impossible is Hanuman. How to cross the 100 yojan samudra and enter Lanka where nobody can enter. Nobody knew about it. So Hanuman discovered this key. So beautifully it is mentioned. Pravishi nagar ki je sab kaja hirde raki kaushalpur raja. Remember the divine name in your heart and go. And everything will be fine. So remembering the divine name, it creates a zone of protection all around. What did Sri Aurobindo advise about corona? I mean, influenza epidemic which happened that time. They are all coronavirus. He said, remain quiet. Call the mother. Don't let fear and adverse suggestion come to you. And you will be fine. Very simple remedy. Remain quiet, first thing. Because when we get agitated, we feel the distance with the divine. Everyone has experience. When there is restlessness, agitation, anger, we can't think of the divine. We can't remember the divine. We feel, even though at that point mechanically calling the divine helps. But suddenly we feel distant. That's why the need of quietude, peace. These forces don't like peace, quietude. So if you create a zone, maybe through Savitri reading, through playing of Savitri music, they don't like. They want all those agitation, anger, that music which is full of jing bang, whatever that music is, jing bang, hard metal, all this they like, they love. They love to see people drunk and high on drugs. Because why they love it? Because that makes us unconscious. They like that state. Wherever there is unconsciousness, wherever there are soulless minds and guideless lives, there they enter. Wherever people are just roaming around unconsciously, there they enter. They make a house. And they can be human instruments also because of these. But we don't have to worry about these human instruments, all this. We have to see that if we take the name of the divine, even if they touch, there are weak spots where they touch. We don't know these weak spots, and that's their last work. Mother says, why they have been allowed? She says, they are instruments of sincerity at the end. But they do their work a bit, they take their work too seriously. The divine shows us our insincere part by the inner discernment. Something awakens in us and we can see, oh, this not really, this doesn't behove of me when I have taken to this path. But how they do it? They will touch that part where it's paining and suddenly you say, ouch! And there's fear, anger. So the second remedy, she says, is sincerity. One is vigilance, second is sincerity. Third, which is a protection, is humility. Humility makes us seek the divine. Whoever says, I don't care whether divine is or not, is extremely arrogant. It means he believes he is all in all of this Brahmand universe. Sometimes I ask only this question. Oh, you must be the creator of the universe to say like that. Common sense and logic that there is something much greater, tremendous. And if there is something much greater and tremendous, powerful, knowledge, call it intelligence, it makes sense that it knows better than we do about this creation, about ourselves, about the work. And it makes sense even logically, if not surrender, turn, seek guidance. And if you can surrender, then there are no limits to what can happen in your life. So, but that requires humility. Why human beings don't pray? Mother says, because they are arrogant. They find it below their dignity. To feel love for God is like, oh, he's a sentimental fool. Because he doesn't have much brain power, no? That's why. I have brain power. I can analyze the life divine. I had one such argument with a man, not an argument, who was taking classes on the Gita. And he was giving it all the Shankaracharya spin. It's all about Mayavada. He said, I couldn't take it. After some time, I said, long back, 30, 40 years back. I said, what you are teaching is neither in the Gita and subtly not Sri Aurobindo's Gita or his yoga. Oh, what do you understand? Young person, no, sir. Sit down. Then my wife Kavita, she said, by the way, you are constantly using the word Sri Aurobindo without the Sri. And we don't like it. Now he said, oh, she was a disciple of Sri Aurobindo. You people, just because of this thing, you are saying you don't understand because I have risen to that level, therefore I can understand. She said, see, we have faith in him. What do you understand about faith? He started analyzing the word faith. Then he said, okay, let me argue now what faith is. So I had after that, this man ran away. He had translated portions of Savitri. He was taking regular classes on the Gita and he ran away never to come back to that center. If you love the divine, would you ever do that? Even if you have difference of opinion, you would still come because you are not coming here for yourself or for others. This was an eye-opener that nothing, just outwardly taking classes, doing all, none of this matters. Whatever helps us to get closer to the divine is welcome. Whatever keeps us away from the divine is to be avoided. This is the simple rule of sadhana. And Sri Aurobindo gave us the ultimate safety mantra. Live always as if the mother was looking at you under the watchful eyes of the divine mother. Do nothing, try to think and feel nothing that would be unworthy of the divine presence. So humility is one of the things which is the biggest safety on the path. Mother speaks of that. Who topples, who take to the path with this aggrandizing idea of becoming a yogi, becoming a guru, becoming something, something, someone, and the divine makes you feel you are nothing. If you have realized you are nothing, then you are ready for everything. And if your somethingness is becoming more and more into whatever thingness, then the greater we rise in the yoga, the more humble we become. This is one of the rules of yoga. So humility, vigilance, sincerity, faith, endurance, these are the things which we need to cultivate, the attitude and finally aspiration, which dissolves all obstacles. And that takes us to this last part. When mother was asked, how should we celebrate or observe the 24th April? What did she say? Exact words I may not remember, but look inside carefully and see what is the most important thing which you cannot do without. Such a beautiful way. If we look inside, we will make wonderful discoveries. If it is really the divine and we are not fooling ourselves, then we'll go through all possible trials and tribulations, all the tests. As I said, they are also, they have their role in this world. Ultimately, one day they will go away. Mother has spoken about it, and by the action of the divine love, but they are there for a purpose to make creation more and more sincere. Ultimately, they point us that, look here, you have missed out here, you have missed out there, which is fine. Nothing wrong with that. They have their purpose and role. We should not. So mother says, whenever I meet these gentlemen, I just look at them, smile at them and say, okay, thank you for what you have shown me, and that's it. Go further. Laugh at them. Don't engage with them. Don't get into an argument with them trying to justify your standpoint. So most important is, what is most important thing for me? And if the answer is the divine, then nothing can stop. And if under the cloak of the divine there is anything else, ambition particularly, then we are in for trouble. And whatever immediate success we may get, as Sri Aurobindo says in the Hour of God, each insincerity of nature, once thy defense against the eye of the master and the light of the ideal, now becomes a gap in thy armor and invites a blow. And the blow shall come. Even if you seem to have been successful, it will come. But being pure, cast aside all fear. For it is the hour of the inevitable. It is the hour of the incalculable. So with faith, courage, aspiration, surrender, trust in the divine, confidence in the divine leading, humility inwardly, and sincerity and a vigil, we can go safely, protected by her grace, surrounded by her love, unaffected by any meanness or hostility from any force in this world or any other. Thank you. Any questions now we can take? You had something. But this is the answer ultimately. Yes. Yes. Never think of adverse forces. Never try to see these fellows, where are they operating. Never think of adverse forces. But they are there. They are a fact of yogic life. Wherever there is yajna, there they come. And every time you have to pass through a test, you have to take a leap, they become very active. Yes, but we should use them to grow more sincere. Absolutely. So, anytime a community, and this applies to community also, say, people often say, or will ask some individuals, if you are going through a very difficult time, that means you are preparing for a leap. Invariably. Because afterwards, many things will happen, many things during that phase will, there will be turmoil, turbulence, a fire and a whirlwind, a treading of the winepress of the gods and wrath of God, and many things will be washed away. What will stay, what will not stay, what will go away, we don't know. But at the end, there will be a big clearing. So they come, and they come when creation, a group, individual, nations, humanity in general, individual, enters into a phase of accelerated evolution to take the next step. Every time we are ready for the next step, we are tested by these forces. So it's a sign that, look at it one way, when you are going into an examination, one way is that, well, they are called as examiners. Oh my God, examination. The second is, once I clear it, I'll be in the next class. So you'll progress. So yes, if they come, they do come. So one has to take the right attitude. I would put it like that. One has to grow in sincerity, look at where they touched you, where there was the weak spot, rather than blaming people, circumstances. Look at our own weak spots, seal them, work upon them. Grow in humility, surrender, faith. It's a moment to intensify your own aspiration. Sometimes good to write it in a diary. That period, form a more active contact with the Divine Mother. Especially with regard to that area where they are attacking. And then, however big the darkness, you will come out. Of every tunnel, there will be light. And you will see you have taken a leap. It was a shortcut. So very true that when they attack. But don't think about them. Think only of the Divine. Live only for the Divine. Love only the Divine.
Is anger a hostile force?
Yeah.
Ask the question.
Yeah.
Anger, an expression of emotion?
Anger is a force of nature. So there are three kinds of forces which prevent the journey of yoga, which come obstacle. One is they are forces of nature. Anger, sexuality, they are very natural in human nature. They are part of our animal endowment, and also they are there, very human expressions of them. Force of the hostile and adverse forces are things like fear, excessive ambition. So they operate more like that. So there are three kinds of forces that test us. One is forces of nature. Then there are the adverse and the hostile forces. Hostile and adverse forces, abnormal depressions, state of despair, urge to commit suicide, crying for no reason. Now this is a hostile because this is not normally in human nature. Or excessive ambition, I want to become the, maybe the king of the world or whatever. And then the third is spiritual forces. They will give us lures, quick spiritual success, all this. Now, what happens with anger and forces of nature is that sometimes the adverse forces can use that weak spot. And what they do is the anger which normally one may be prone to suddenly becomes almost uncontrollable. It becomes a violent outburst. And that is still okay. Okay in the sense that okay, this anger which took a violent turn and one has to get over it. But then in the aftermath, they leave the person feeling bad, sad, guilty, void of all energy, depressed, that makes it worse. So when anger arises, if one can notice it in the beginning, very fine, vigilance. But if one could not, because of past habit of nature, then not to start identifying so much that I am an angry person, I can't help it, it's my nature, I can't change. Or that, well, that's how I am, there's no hope for me. All this one should not. Steadily keep increasing the aspiration, faith, surrender and keep going. So you'll find it become weaker and weaker. Also, the more we grow in peace, forgiveness, benevolence, then much of anger is because you feel frustrated, something you wanted to happen didn't happen. And therefore, there is anger, outburst. Sometimes it can be without any reason, apparent reason. So when that is the case, then one can look inside and see why I got angry. So maybe it was some desire which was frustrated. And then one can reorient oneself. Well, if this is my goal, then well, these desires, why should I harbor them so much? So this is how one has to work upon it. Or if one got angry with someone because you believed that this is the right thing to do, and you may be right, it's not that, and the person is doing his own way, and this is the natural anger nature, as I said, natural anger. So again, we have to understand that wideness and generosity, that each person has to move along their own path. You can't change them. We are here to change ourselves. And people are tied to their own nature. So many ways. So to cultivate benevolence, generosity, charity of nature. All this helps us to get rid of anger. Forgiveness, not to carry it inside. So these are qualities which help us to peace, most important. So anger is a force of nature. Sometimes the adverse forces can use it. Adverse forces, Grief, yes. So again, grief, because of a loss event, is a natural thing. It comes because of attachment. So that's how grief operates. So attachment is very natural in human nature. It is again a natural process. But again, it can be used by these forces sometimes to throw in depression and guilt. Wherever depression and guilt come in, then we have to be careful. For instance, guilt may come in. Did I do enough? Could I have prevented that loss? Now this is how they start playing upon the grief. There we have to remind ourselves that destiny operates in ways that when things have to happen, they happen. And we have to see our own motives. When the motives are good, motives are right, then there is nothing to... And if the motives were wrong unconsciously, then one has become conscious, one understands that maybe during that time something came through and destiny operated in certain ways. So destiny is a big word that way. Ultimately the divine will, that's what happens. And so that's way. And then attachment is changed into, has to be changed into love. So attachment is always with something which is tangible, form, name, outward. But love is something very deep. So that flame of love can always remain awake. It can even express itself even after the person is gone. One can express this love by sending thoughts of love, by doing something. That's how, why people hold memorials. One of the ways of holding a memorial is that they express their love in very tangible ways, even when the person is not there. So this way to transmute grief. So grief is again of nature because of attachment. All human beings are prone to grief. But if it becomes excessive, it fills one with guilt, despair, or one begins to feel, my life has no meaning. Now that's where one has to be careful that a red line is being crossed. Because the meaning of my life cannot be defined by anybody's presence. So that's where perhaps I did do this and I need to understand that my life is a life which has to evolve along its own lines and set the person free. That's how the love operates, that it is happy in togetherness. But when someone chooses to go away, I mean, even death is a choice ultimately, one lets the person free, knowing that, well, every soul has its own unique journey. And by these means, by reading books which liberate us from this attachment, like Essays on the Gita or the Gita, it helps us to get over these things. But by some kind of knowledge, even if we don't have the true spiritual knowledge, even an intellectual awareness of these truths, it helps us. For example, that the person is with mother, or if I have lost something of great value, well, the divine has given me this and the divine has taken it away from me. So ultimately it is the divine who is the sole player behind every mask. So these are ways and means by which we should overcome. So the line between nature and adverse forces sometimes can become thin. Normally, human nature is able to bounce back. The forces of nature, one is able to bounce back. But where it becomes excessive and interferes with our connection with the divine, then surely it is adverse forces. And one should keep them away. Okay. Okay. We'll take this last question.
Yeah. My question may take a little more time to formulate, if you pardon me, is that, see, the mother and Shobhito came to save the world and the man and take them to the higher sphere.
And then they created Auroville.
Man has difficulties.
Yeah.
And to solve all the difficulties, she has created the Auroville, as she said.
And so she brought the difficulties, right? That was where we were.
Yes.
She,
she has made this galaxy plan, and that is a kind of, maybe it is a kind of yantra.
Yes.
The trap are the receptive.
Yes.
Yes. Is to change the eradicate the difficulties of the world and change the man. And then there might be instances in the world where even the part of the same family might have asked the neighbors to create a bomb or something to throw it the my brother or the other people, but by the time they are ready, they might have also used the same model to harm the same person.
No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure whether I have fully got it, but I'll explain what I have understood. Step one, yes, it is a yantra at seen one way. There's no doubt about it. Behind all plans and designs, there's a whole book on this, study on this. All plans and designs, even in nature, it's a kind of yantra. When it is done by spiritual beings, I'm talking in general. So these temple constructions and other places, they were condensation of energies. But not all condensations of energy are intense and powerful enough to engage in the process of transformation. This we have to understand. So there are places which have been built in the past, like Meenakshi Madurai temple, if you see the way it is built. All many of these old temples, even now recently people are making it, to bring in certain kind of energies and concentrate it. And by these energies, it helps in the material environment for those who meditate in those places to get nourished spiritually. And over a period of time, it is also true that these places, many of them, they are dated. To put it like that, why they become dated? Why after a period of time they may not work? I am not talking of period of time means 50 years, 100 years, but 1000 years. The reason is because to keep this yantra alive, if you look at it like a yantra, you need the priest with faith. So there has to be at least one person. Shubhendu writes, they say a basic design of a temple. Now there is the Ram temple. So you have installed the Pratima, everything is fine, Vigra and the presence. But if over a period of time people don't invoke, even about center, mother has spoken of that. Nalnida, there is a talk of Nalnida. Opening a center is not enough. Now everything is a center. Auroville is also a center in the largest sense. It is not enough to open a center. It must be the hearth of a perfect sincerity. So if people don't engage in yoga, after a time, the force may withdraw. I'm talking general, not about Auroville. The force may withdraw. As simple as that. So, when the force withdraws, the anti-divine forces will begin to rise. Now, this is what has happened to religions. That's what Sri Aurobindo and the mother have spoken about. That there have been places which were holy, sacred. But because people, they took the wrong turn, they had a very different kind of approach. They didn't obey the master or things got wrong. I'm not talking of the things that could happen. So the truth receded in the secrecy of silence. and then there is a shell. That shell gets occupied by anti-divine forces, which pass off. That's what happens in religion. Mullah, Pandit, Kaji, priest, all these are, because it was a throne of power, people continue to still have that reverence. And this asura traps them through the reverence. I'm being very frank. For instance, people come to Auroville and come to ashram. And they meet you, meet me, or meet anybody. Why do you think they have the respect or that kind of, when they come to know you are from Auroville or ashram? Not because of us. It is because of Mother and Aurobindo. Because they know we are connected to them. Now, the line may be very thin where we think I am the one. So there are people who take this attitude. I am the one. I am building this place. I am doing it. I will do it. This wrong turn, one wrong turn, ego comes in and it can create mess. So one has to be very careful. There is a whole saying in ancient Indian thought that ordinarily also when you engage in evil and wicked acts, it has its impact. But when you do it in a place which is meant to be divine, Tirtha, the impact is 10 times more. It hits you very hard. There are places where you can indulge, like you go to Las Vegas and indulge in gambling and all kinds of unspeakable things. It's okay. That's a place where that's the forces. But if you indulge in gambling in a place which is a Tirtha, then you may be hit very, very hard. So this is what happens ordinarily. And sometimes if there is not a single person, Nalinidha spoke about the ashram, so did Kapali Shastri in the similar terms, exact words again not there, but as long as there is one person who has faith in the ideal, the action of the ashram will continue to remain. The same applies in Auroville. Just one person who has a living faith, who is ready to give his all for the sake of the truth one has seen, and doesn't matter with what is happening around, one continues to have this faith in the ideal and a living aspiration that yes, it's mother's project, and even if my life were to go for it, it's worth it. Even if everything was taken away from me, still this is what I want to do. As long as there is one person, the place will continue to, because you need somebody to hold materially the energy. So yes, because it's a field meant for transforming, it will call people who can bomb, if you want to put it like that. All kinds of people, darkness, and it will continue to operate. So what is our role in it? Not to start engaging in fighting with them, because that's their role. That's the mother's role. Our role is to invoke more and more of her presence in this atmosphere, more and more aspiration, more and more faith. And by this power of faith, aspiration, you will see that these things will become less and less, rather than fighting with them, because that will only multiply, become a force multiplier, and sometimes it will sully us also. So that's where our role is. Okay. Chema.